Welcome to Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Joe Cook, got Eric Nalin. We're in the thick of the recruiting season. It's also June 27th, big day in Houston, big day in the Nalin household. But it's a big day for Texas football, talking a lot about what's going on in the offseason with the current team. As you mentioned, that's recruiting serves the current team, and got to talk about the Longhorns that'll take the field in 2025. Lots of insider notes to go over. Make sure you like this video, make sure you subscribe to the channel, and of course, if you haven't already, make sure you have notifications on so you don't miss a video at all. Eric, it's June turning into July, June 27th again, and Longhorns are just over 2 months away, and a lot of different things going on the Denius Fields, on Campbell Williams Field, and Moncrief, just all over the place.
Yeah, well, anticipating that recruiting is going to go through just a brief dip, I think it's going to pick up around July 2nd. We went a little bit harder on the team notes just to give fans something to keep their mind off of recruiting. You shouldn't worry about recruiting under Steve Sarkisian. We've been chronicling this for a long time, going back to that first 2022 class where it dipped during the summer, and then they had the huge flourish in December. We've seen it, you know, time and time again where they've pulled a lot of rabbits out of their hats. So they might have a little bit of a glitch here over the next couple of days. It's going to pick up in early July, and hopefully they can go on a run starting then. But if you're worried about that, come over to Inside Texas and read about the team, or just keep watching here.
Over 1,000 words. We'll go over some of the big highlights. You started off, we had a question. Somebody was asking about Merod Watson. And if you go to the Texas roster, the transfers and summer enrollees aren't there yet. Right before media days is typically when they update the roster. So Watson's on campus, working out, posting all the stuff on social media. And he's made a name for himself in a defensive tackle room early.
Yeah, you know, if you go over all the transfers they brought in, I'm not sure that he's going to have the biggest impact for this season, but he might have the biggest overall impact out of all the players that they brought in. It might only be a two-year impact. He's, you know, some people consider him to be that good. He's working hard. It looks like he came from a pretty good culture there. Fran Brown, the head coach, was a defensive coordinator at Georgia, knows how to run a program, working under Kirby like he did. Came in with the right attitude, getting after it, assimilating, moving around like what they expected when they got him. And we got a good source to think there's a good chance that he starts next to Cole Brevard. Now, starting at D tackle doesn't mean quite as much as it does at other schools because they rotate so heavily. Alex January is going to play a lot, Travis Shaw, a couple other guys. But right now, Merod Watson's looking like the real deal.
One of my favorite players they added in the portal, really versatile. And man, him and Brevard right by each other looks like some of the pairings of the past. You did mention January going to have a big role. The transfers may make people think like, oh, don't think too much about the guys they already have. But that's not the case with January, correct?
Yeah, January is just on a little bit longer curve than Watson, I think. And it's kind of a different build, Watson is stockier, wider, a little bit more physically imposing at this time. January is still kind of growing into his body. Well, he's leaning up, lost some baby fat. I actually think January might have a little bit more higher upside than Watson long-term, which I'm not sure a lot of people will agree with that. Certainly people behind the scenes do. They think January's got a very, very bright future, athletic, great size, but still kind of growing into his body. Physicality still coming to bear. Watson's just a little bit more physical. Brevard's a little more physical. Travis Shaw, more physically mature. January might have as much talent as anybody in that room, though.
Should be fun to track. We'll bounce around a little bit. Going to go over to the offensive side of the ball. Emmett Mosley, if you remember, he did have a knee injury in high school, kind of what helped Texas or caused Texas to back off a little bit. Goes to Stanford, gets healthy for the Cardinal, post a breakout year, enters the portal and commits to Texas. Starting to get his feet under him at Texas, and it took a little while, it sounds like.
Well, my suspicions were confirmed that he was nursing an injury when he arrived because, it was taking a while for us to hear anything about him. Sark mentioned him in an interview earlier this week, had us checking on him again. Sure enough, he's back working with the program. He looks kind of like what we expected when they got him. Maybe not the most explosive guy that they've added, but clearly a savvy, smart, good route runner, extremely mature kid, does everything the right way, hard worker, driven. All the things you expect to hear about a kid that picked Stanford coming to Bear. And then, one of the bright spots we heard about him from our staff sources were his physicality. Now, you're not going to see a lot of that in 7-on-7 yet, but he moves around. He carries himself like he belongs. Like, he's got an attitude about him. He knows he's a tough guy. It's kind of intriguing. there's going to be a lot of hidden yards, I think, created this year by wide receiver blocking. Wingo will get after it. Of course, he's got a size and physicality advantage over most DBs. DeAndre Moore will get after it, and then Mosley will as well. One other thing we learned is Mosley's outside receiver right now, DeAndre Moore inside. I think they want to keep that slot fade alive. DeAndre Moore has that vertical speed that Sark wants. And then you've got Wingo outside as well. So I think that's going to open the door for Parker Livingstone to get some more reps. He's going to be a bigger vertical threat than Mosley is, better speed than Mosley, better length than Mosley. And then you've got Aaron Butler that might get some playing time outside. So right now, if we had to do a two deep, just for the heck of it, it would be Wingo on one side, although the number three outside receiver would be Livingstone. So he'd back up Wingo or Mosley. And then Daylon McCutcheon behind DeAndre Moore. Aaron Butler figures in there, and then you got Jamie French and Kalik Lockett battling for snaps as well.
With Wingo, Moore, and even Mosley, they know what it looks like. They've seen it from the guys ahead of them. But with Moore, it sounds like he's starting to be the guy showing others how to do things.
Yeah, you know, they keep losing these guys to the NFL. Right now, there was a little bit of a leadership void. Now, they've got a bunch of good dudes in that room, guys doing it the right way. But it takes time to cultivate leadership, to become a leader, step into your own skin, and just have that confidence to lead. DeAndre Moore has had leadership intangibles since he got on campus. And once we started hearing him carrying himself sort of like Jordan Whittington and willing to block, you're like, okay, you know, it's only a matter of time before he steps into that role. Well, he's doing that right now, not only becoming a wide receiver leader, a leader in the wide receiver room, but also for the entire team. Expecting a big year out of him. My prediction is that this is his final year in Austin. You know, other sources think, hey, maybe he'll be back for two. I kind of think he's gone after this year. And honestly, if he leaves after this year, it probably means good things for the offense.
Moving a little bit closer to the football, talking about another guy who came in during the summer, that's Nick Townsend. Stayed at Decaney to run a little track, ran it really well during his senior year, and some of those physical traits are starting to become obvious on the practice field in 7-on-7.
Yeah, you know, he and Emory Winston are both kind of living up to their evaluation. Winston a little bit more so in that, you know, he's savvy route runner, good hands, all those things that we saw on tape, a pretty nuanced player. And then Nick Townsend's just kind of like this awesome athletic force, physical. You know, maybe not the smoothest route runner yet, though I've seen him run routes. He has that ability, still learning that. But just that kind of physical, awesome presence, getting after it, hard worker, all the stuff that we knew about him at Decaney, he's showing that at Texas, which, you know, the floor for him is extremely high, which is nice because the ceiling is also high, given the fact that he's running, you know, 10-900 meters. And then, you know, he's putting on good muscle already. That's really all he needs is time to work out. He's always so busy playing so many different sports. He's always moving around, burning calories. Right now they can get him on the right meal plan, get him in the weight room. He's already putting on some weight just in the short time on campus, looking like the real deal. Vertical threat. Tight end is loaded. Now, I keep forgetting to ask about Jordan Washington because it feels like I know him so well as a player because he's been on campus for over a year now. But Jack Endries, we're learning a lot about him stepping into the leadership role, sort of like what we were talking about with we didn't talk about it. LaVon Johnson, a D tackle, is doing that as well as a transfer that's coming in. Not trying to assert himself, not trying to take over the room, but also, you know, but talking to the guys, getting to know them, taking the time to learn and, you know, do what everybody does when you step into a new role, whether it's a new job in the business world or whatever. You come in, you talk to people, you get to know them. You know, Andrews is doing that, sharing his story, learning about them. And as you do that, you're a little bit more mature. Coming from a place like Cal, which, you know, say what you want about the school, I think they've got pretty good culture under the head coach there. And, you know, he was a walk-on. And so he's got like a rags-to-riches story as far as football goes, similar to Michael Taft. So he's kind of come up the hard way, earning the respect. And then, of course, he's moving around savvy. And probably the main takeaway from what we talked about with injuries this week is that him and Arch seem to be making concerted effort to get on the same page and you know, make up for lost time.
Who would have thought the Bay Bridge would have been a big storyline for Texas football entering 2025?
Those guys are going to move the sticks. They're going to make some big plays. They're tough. They're physically mature. You know, I think Arch is going to find them quite a bit on some big plays, some big conversions when they need it.
Before we keep going, got to show some love to our sponsor, and that is Academy Sports and Outdoors. In honor of your service and support for our country, Academy Sports and Outdoors is offering military and first responders 10% off your purchase, both in your local Academy Sports and Outdoors and online from April 27th through July 4th. Exclusions apply. Visit academy.com/discount for details. So one more week left of this promo for military and first responders. Thank you again. We will celebrate y'all on July 4th. Hopefully we get to celebrate a lot of things on July 4th, but we'll keep going with the latest team news. The running back room. You talked a lot in your notes about how Roschon Johnson established a culture, had someone helping him. Helping may not be like the right word, but with him, with Bijan Robinson. Trey Wisner is doing a lot of the things that Roschon Johnson did, but in his own unique way.
Yeah, you know, Roschon was kind of a stoic. You know, people just respected him for the way he battled, the way he worked, the way he tried to lead the team through adversity that first season. He, you know, he's a big reason they broke that 6-game losing streak, and it was kind of his team after that. Trey Wisner's shown very similar toughness, very different personality, though. He's the energizer bunny. He's talking nonstop. He's the hype man, always getting everybody up to practice. So different personality, but sort of the same respect. You know, he took on the load to carry, you know, the team across the finish line as far as the running back position goes. He was, you know, getting 30 carries in back-to-back weeks, got very little help down the stretch, and he was very banged up. So through that, between the combination of the energy he's had since he showed up on campus, the respect he earned last season, not just, you know, nobody cares about the 1,000 yards. They care about the tough yards he was getting when he was banged up. He's earned the respect of the team. And then you got C.J. Baxter, who's kind of taken on that Bijan Robinson role. It's like everybody likes him. They want him to succeed, especially battling back from adversity over a pretty serious knee injury. He's coming back. He's like the guy that everybody wants to be as far as like personality wise. So he's kind of like Bijan in that way. But at the same time, you know, it matters what you're doing on the field. Both those guys are looking like threats out of the backfield as far as catching the ball. We kind of know that Wisner has that. He has 40 catches last year. But hearing that about Baxter's, you know, it's creating some optimism around the program because he's moving, I think, a lot better than what people expected coming back from that injury. At the same time, we got to temper early season expectations. We've been doing that all offseason. Sark mentioned the same thing in an interview the other day where, you know, they're going to bring him along just a little bit slowly and ease him into it. I think that's twofold. One is to, yes, give him time to rehabilitate to 100%. Here's about 90% now. But another is they're going to need that guy late in the season. You know, they're going to want that hammer. They don't want Trey Wisner out there by his lonesome in December and January. You know, he's going to have help from Christian Clark and Jared Gibson, but they want Baxter to be ready 100% for when the team truly needs him later in the season.
Talking about some of the guys who are going to be helping him get those yards, helping all those backs, and much has been made about Texas losing 4 starters on the offensive line to the NFL. Not much has been made, well, maybe not in recent weeks, but on Inside Texas in the spring, we talked a lot about DJ Campbell, and a lot of the things that he did well in the spring, he's continuing to do well in the summer.
Well, there's a huge correlation to maturity and the contract year. DJ Campbell is definitely in his contract year right now, and he's showing it. He's working his tail off, becoming more of a vocal leader. And he's kind of taking that route that earlier in their career, you really have a hard time ever seeing it get to that point, but that's what you love about covering these guys. You know, like Tavondre Sweat, we never would have thought he would kind of become the person he did as far as team leadership. And DJ Campbell, you know, he went from sort of the shy, isolated guy that was hanging out with the D tackles to now he's the leader in that room. One of the smaller success stories that you don't hear about as much, but it goes a long ways towards, you know, trying to keep the leadership intact, the carryover effect from losing Jake Majors and losing Kelvin Banks. And speaking of Banks, Trevor Goosby's trying to step into that role. Not, you know, we know he's going to do it on the field. We know he's going to play it at a high level. But he's definitely working like it's a contract year. I know there's some hope that he'll come back for 2 years. First of all, I'm not even sure Texas could afford that, given how good he's going to be this year. But, you know, when I said, you know, he might come back for 2 years, I was just hunting and pecking there to see if there's anything there. Source kind of laughed and said he's working like it's a contract year. We expect big things out of them. Now, can the offensive line, you know, play at least at the level it was last year? I think so, and possibly even better for reasons we've been covering this offseason.
You did have a note. We kind of have a sense of what that first five looks like, but there is someone in the group trying to enter that top 6 and 8 who's been having a good recent couple of weeks.
Who did I mention?
Connor Robertson.
Oh, Connor Robertson. Okay, yeah. I always consider him a backup already. Yeah, well, Connor, we've been hearing good things about Connor going back to last fall. Now, his problem is he's got Cole Hudson ahead of him, and Cole's going to start. But Connor, you know, I'm bullish on Connor having that season that comes out of nowhere in 2026, and everybody's like, wow, this guy is a lot different than what I remember. Now, he's sticking to the script so far, and he's in line to start in 2026, possibly play this year. You know, Cole Hudson might be the number three guard. If Connor Robertson's ready to play center, it sounds like he is. There's a lot of confidence in Connor. You caught me off guard there. I was thinking of a young guy, Connor. Even after my own article, he's sliding through the cracks. But yeah,
hey, there's 1,000 words, man. There's a lot to go over in there.
There's confidence that Connor can play, and we've been hearing good things. Dating back to last fall, when he's been a bit of an afterthought to this point. But that's the thing about offensive linemen. When the lights are off and nobody's paying attention, if those guys are grinding, eventually, they're going to come out full-grown men. That guy might play football at 23 years old and have a big advantage over a 19-year-old defensive tackle across from him.
Last but not least, going back over to defense, you talked about some of the different guys who are starting to earn some reps. And with the way Dwayne Aquino runs his secondary, likes to put a lot of guys out there. Guys have to earn trust. And there are a few players who've been developing in 7-on-7 and maybe showing Dwayne Aquino and Mark Orfe that they'll be able to be on the field later this year.
Yeah, we've kind of had two themes going on with defensive back all offseason. One, we think Jelani McDonald will start at star, at least against Ohio State. And then another theme is they're going to play as many defensive backs, probably more defensive backs than you've ever seen at Texas. And that's saying something for a school like DBU that's had as much talent as it's had. Part of that reason is, yeah, they like to rotate. That's just part of their general philosophy. They do it at linebacker, they do it at edge, they do it at D tackle. Part of it is they trust a lot of players. And in this modern age, you got to keep your players. You don't have to keep them happy necessarily. That's not what I'm trying to say. You have to keep them engaged. And if they're ready to play, play them. You know, if you trust them, play them. And they've got a lot of guys that are talented that they trust. And, that extends to the depth at safety. Jordan Johnson-Rebell, kind of old reliable, more of a pads player, meaning that, his physicality is one of his strengths. But also he's running well out there, too. I think a lot of people, probably myself included, slept on his coverage skills a little bit coming out of high school. So he's your number three. Derek Williams, of course, we expect him to start next to Taff. And then Xavier Filsimi. One of the things that I listen to for defensive backs is, are they communicating? And sounds like communication is continuing to improve for him. We started hearing about that in the spring, and he's just getting more comfortable. If they're communicating, they know what they're doing. If they know what they're doing, they're going to be able to play fast. There's no point in running 10-3, 10-4, whatever he runs. If you're thinking slow, that'll slow you down. He's starting to communicate better. He's going to play fast. We expect him to be probably the fourth safety. So they're in a good spot there. Again, that assumes Jelani McDonald playing star. We do expect McDonald will play some safety as well. Aquino's going to want to hunt matchups. Certain times he'll want probably a smaller nickel out there, more of a coverage guy. Let's see, what else did we talk about at DB? We talked about ball hawking, right?
Correct. Who are the guys who kind of can make the plays that Jadae Barron and Andrew Makuba did, but those are tough shoes to fill.
Yeah, that's part of the paradox we're in right now. So what we heard about, well, there hasn't been many interceptions, and we're thinking, okay, well, is that partly due to the quarterbacks protecting the football, or is it due to the lack of ball hawks? You know, Andrew Makuba and Jadae Barron, they knew how to find the football. Maybe it's a little bit of both. We didn't hear about many interceptions throughout the spring for the most part. Certainly Arch protected the ball. I think the loss of Barron hurts and Makuba in that regard. That's one of the things that we have to pay attention to this season is the loss of ball production. Those guys combined for 10 interceptions last year, I believe. But we did hear good things about Warren Roberson, really twitchy guy, breaks really fast on the ball downhill. Santana Wilson, who had some picks during spring ball, same thing. And then Kobe Black mentioned, using his length to get his hands on the football, instinctive and smart player as well. Now that's just going to have to be something that we watch this year. Texas, I think, was number two in the country last year at forcing interceptions. There's probably going to be a bit of a drop off. You hope that the pass rush helps force quarterbacks into some poor decisions. But for the most part, we're not hearing about ball hawking necessarily. There's a lot of talent in the secondary. There's going to be some guys that make some plays. We're just not exactly sure who that's going to be yet.
Hey, they got a big test week one. We're just over 2 months away. Maybe they'll be able to get
a young quarterback too.
Exactly. An inexperienced quarterback in Kyne Holtz or Sayin. So going to have some opportunities. And Jeremiah Smith, go guard that guy. Make sure you can do that. Make sure you like the video. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. Of course, turn on notifications for us if you have not already. any big recruiting news, any big team news we will have here. And head to InsideTexas.com. We got a link down there in the description. Sign up for all the latest recruiting news. Lots of stuff happening over the course of the next week. Holiday for some, work week for us. A lot of fun to cover all this, and great to see how the class will take shape. So, Eric, thank you so much. Thank you for watching. We'll see you next time on Inside the Program, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.